This week on RSBNB Update, we open 2023 with a discussion on death costs, the grand exchange fee, and the biggest sources and sinks of GP and RuneScape. The Ring of Death has also been updated, and we highlight if changes are needed. And we say goodbye to Fresh Start Worlds. This is RSBNB Update, episode 917, recorded Thursday, January 12th, 2023. Bleeding out. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. We're back for the first episode of 2023, recorded in 2023. We did pre-record one last week that you guys have hopefully all listened to, our special with Mod Jack discussing RuneScape's endgame. That was a fun episode. Learned a lot from that one, and definitely have a different perspective on the way RuneScape game updates are built, specifically towards what happens after the beginning and mid game. So if you haven't had a listen to that, definitely go back in the archives and give that a listen. But Tanis, welcome back for the new year.
Thank you, Shane. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we got a fun week to discuss everyone's favorite topic, death, and dare we say it, taxes.
Fees.
That's right. David is also here to help us on the PVM side of that update. Welcome.
Hey.
David is one of our PVM experts. His general claim to fame is now PVMing on an Ironman. But before that, when NexAOD launched, you famously or perhaps infamously had to ice your wrists for that one. You also were involved in first skills on day one of Solak and other bosses like that. So definite high echelon PVM on there for that one. So
definitely at one time I was.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Would you ever go that hard again?
Now that I have a real job, I'm not sure that I can. But when I was in college, it was great. I could just PVM all night and there were no consequences to it, but now apparently you're supposed to show up to work or something.
Okay. Also, if you want to follow along, full show notes can be found at update.show. We are also in Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, and we have our Discord at rsbnb.com/discord. I am Shane12088 in Game, and Tanis can be found at Tanis79 now that Fresh Start is over, and we will have a little bit on Fresh Start wrapping up as well as we progress through this show. But of course, death costs, a matter of life and death, and we're gonna start on this update by talking about the economy angle first and the information we got in a dev blog that was posted this last week here, and we finally got those cash flows we were looking at, Tanis. We were wondering, you know, what kind of money comes in, where does it come from, where does it go, that sort of thing, right? And we got that now. So
yeah, it was one of those things where, like, I thought I wanted it, and then when we got it, I was like, oh, I didn't really want this at all. So
yeah,
but I bet you're very excited, and you're going to explain all of the ins and outs for what these numbers mean. I found
that's
it
really interesting. I was so hyped for this. This was maybe my favorite blog they've ever done, and I wish they blogged in this level of detail like weekly.
Well, I
loved it.
I mean, you gotta consider the people providing this data are balancers, people as interested in math, and potentially people who also have a background in economics. And if you want to get data, that's no better group of people to get data from. So as we go, each and every day, on average, there is 201,013,251,256 GP added to the game. 112,888,477,879 is spent, leaving a delta of 88,124,773,377 GP. That is extra that's added to the game, what they call the delta. 88 billion GP a day. 88 billion. That surprise any of you guys?
No.
Okay. Tennis?
No. I mean, because I just... No.
What's wrong?
Yeah, I mean, the introduction of God Wars Dungeon 3 added immense amount of gold to the game through alchemies. So we knew that the number had to be extremely high.
Yeah, and Wilderness Flash events, too.
That's true. Yeah, definitely.
Necronium Salvages and whatnot.
Those are still relatively popular.
And then in terms of the things that add gold to the game, alchemy invention machines are adding 92.2 billion gold a day.
Yep.
General stores, 43.2 billion. Regular high alchemy, 24.7 billion. Monster drops, drop to the floor, 14.5 billion. Monster drops, advanced coin magnet. I'm guessing this is the gold accumulator. 9.5 billion. Treasure hunter cash bags, 8.4 billion. The money tree, 2.6 billion. Priff pickpocketing, 1.4 billion. Treasure hunter direct coin prices, 1 billion. And the crystal chest, 884.9 million, with 2.1 billion being added through other sources.
Yeah, I would also have, I suppose that there were two recently added to the game, but I would wonder what Crux of Qual Knights are adding to the game in terms of GP, because a lot of people have certainly switched over from Priff to them, and I'd say it's something like 500k an hour.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. Coins, this is
something along those lines.
This
right?
is averaged throughout. This is averaged over months. So I mean,
correct. You look at that update is clearly way too new. To be able to do that.
But yeah. I mean, you could imagine maybe that would fit into the other category or something to that effect. But one thing I saw when this was posted was that a lot of people were saying, you know, hey, you want to talk about inflation? You got two sources of Treasure Hunter here at number 6 and number 9 doing this. And, you know, personally, and Tanis, we've talked about this before, I would rather personally be spun and have a little bit less clarity on the information than providing what we know is a vocal part of the community who doesn't like Treasure Hunter, who is now going to hone in on this instead. So I think it would have been smart to maybe just leave these off the list or put them in some sort of different category, maybe lump them into the other category as well. I don't know. Because I don't think it was a good idea to highlight that as Treasure Hunter being the number 6 and number 9 sources in the game, because you want this post to be first and foremost about the economy and the changes that you're bringing in with this. You don't want it to become a discussion around Treasure Hunter, which I saw happen in a few places within the community. That's my only concern with this list. I feel like everything else goes without saying pretty much on there.
I probably... So you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Avoid it, then people say you withheld this and you withheld it because of that reason, so on and so forth.
Right, and the point is other games would have no problem withholding these sort of things if it would have meant a smoother community response.
But also,
maybe you could have withheld the whole damn thing because I
maybe,
don't think
like what does this do for us, right? Like, what does this do for us? I mean, I find it interesting and the podcast listeners find it interesting, but what does it do for us as a community?
It's incredibly interesting, I think. And I also think that it's good to have information about the broader workings of the economy to figure out exactly, because inflation has been such a hugely debated topic
years
now.
I can't take it anymore, man.
I can't take it anymore. We sit here, we talk about it like it is a legit, real economy. This is not a real economy any more than Bitcoin is a real freaking currency. It is not. It's interesting. We can philosophize about it, but it's not a real economy. It doesn't work along actual economic laws.
You know, there's somebody out there who has done a PhD on or master's thesis on the RuneScape economy in that I've actually given them data on this before. Unfortunately, I didn't get an email address aside from the their Airbnb form account, and I haven't heard back from there. But I know somebody was researching it to see what kind of parallels we can draw between real-world economy and virtual game economy. I know somebody's doing that for a research.
The real-world economy has decisions that are made that are more that you cannot just make it math. I know you want to make it math. You can't do that. That's not
there
the
is
way
a,
it works.
There is an enormous amount of research about the relationship between MMOs and real economies and how we can use MMOs to study like real world economies. Like there's been so many papers written about World of Warcraft's economy and the real economy. So I do think that there are many ways in which it functions similarly to a real economy. And there's a reason why Jagex hires actual economists to study this stuff is because there's tremendous parallels.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I kind of disagree. I think it is just math. Like I think ultimately everything is.
Yeah. And I mean, I have a favorite saying that numbers are innocuous and they don't hurt anyone on their own. It's the conclusions and how we apply them that hurt people.
And every decision is made with everyone's biases and everything in their history and everything they brought along. It is not just numbers, no matter how much you want to detach yourself from it. That's okay. But what I'm saying is,
I'm going to let you finish your thought, but I have a big question for you. So go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, what we're talking about is its own thing. Right. If we're talking about the RuneScape economy, we're talking about the RuneScape economy. But we don't have a labor market here. We don't have services. We do.
We have services.
We don't, Shane. Like, if they want more items, they poof more items.
Well, that's also how real economies work. Like, if the Federal Reserve wants to change the valuation of currency, they could either do quantitative easing or they can restrict money through interest rates. It's like that does happen in real life too.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, there are real things. Everything comes out of the ground in one way or another. And
it kind of does the same at RS too.
I mean, convince me, because I'm not convinced of it.
You mine an ore, you make it into a rune plate body, you high alchemize it, you get gold, you contribute to the problem.
If you say there's a problem, I guess.
And see, that's the thing. And this is, again, taking the point away from what should have been talked about this week was why the GP sync is needed, and we know that looking at inflation is going to be something that they do later on this year, perhaps. Whereas this is just to provide context of why the changes were made for the death cost system. Now, are you...
Well, they had to justify the... I mean, we haven't gotten to this part yet, but they had to justify that. Like,
yeah,
they
did.
Just done that without
they
any
did.
Explanation at all.
Yeah,
plus,
that's the thing.
They had to assuage concerns that they were going to implement a fix to something that has been around for how long has this death system been around, Shane? About
a
decade or so?
Like 2011, I think, ish.
Yeah, right around a decade. So they're changing a core fundamental mechanic of the game that's 10 years old. And I think it's really great that they disclose a lot of information. And the treasure hunter thing, I think, is inevitable because the people who want to talk about Treasure Hunter will find a way to talk about it anyways.
Okay.
And I think that armed with the knowledge that Treasure Hunter is a drop in the bucket compared to other things like
True.
Alt machines.
True. 0.54% and 4.2%.
Yeah, I think that is much better than people claiming erroneously that Treasure Hunter is some huge percentage.
Right.
Because if they had left it off the list, people would have been like, oh, it's clear they're trying to hide Treasure Hunter from us. I bet Treasure Hunter is $100 billion a day.
So why can't the people who are complaining about it see that frame that it's about 5% of the total thing compared to 45% of your elk machines?
Well, because they...
I mean, I guess it's a controversy that sells, right?
I mean, I think that they have a set agenda, and I think that agenda is more powerful without facts An agenda that is pure narrative with no facts to counter it is much more powerful than an agenda that is only narrative against narrative.
Hello, Alex Jones, right?
Well, I would not analogize my way of thinking about the world to him, but sure. I mean, I do think that, like, information.
Why you got to do great. David like that? I mean, I don't agree, but damn, I wouldn't call him Alex Jones.
No, I'm not saying he's like Alex Jones. I'm saying the people out there who extend things without facts are.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm okay with this analogy now. I'm okay with being not Alex Jones. Yeah, that's
yes.
Nice. We're good. Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah. And then we get to the greatest spend sources: death, 61.8%. Or 69.8 billion GP out of the economy each and every day. General stores take 22.4 billion or 19.8%. The bond conversion tax takes 6 billion or 5.3%. Degregated item recharging 3.7 billion, 3.3%. Kingdom of Miscellanea 2.5 billion or 2.3%. Boss instances, 2.2 billion. Prif Max, Guild Portal Redirection, 1.1 billion. Prif Combo Potion Unlock, 791 million. Nex Armor Recharging, 775 million. And the Ports Smuggler, 369 million, with other coming in at 2.9 billion. This does not include Spirit Shards, Richie Pet Donations, or others, or a handful of other sources.
Yeah, there were some really interesting things to note about this. So the first is general stores. I assume that means all
everybody
stores.
Doing their shop runs. Yeah.
So rune shops, things like that.
Yeah.
The other really interesting things to me were I thought ports would be much higher. I was really surprised that it was so low.
The one that surprised me was boss instances, because I mean, I've never really felt the pain of a boss instance cost, but here we are.
Well, that's a good point. But other than that first free instance a week, every time you go to a Raxor, it's what, a couple hundred K? And, you know, like Iron Man used to have to spend some you have to spend some at Virago if you're going to do hard mode. That instance costs 1 mil. There's some instances. They're relatively low other than Virago, but they do add up, I suppose.
Yeah, so death sinks 69.8 billion. Tannis, how do you feel about the GE fee now? And once again, we're calling it a fee, not a tariff, because a tariff or tax implies that it's something that is taken away. But whereas what's really happening is that this is a user fee. It's a user fee.
Well, I've come to two conclusions. One, either there isn't, either this is not a big deal, and I really, it's just not going to affect how I play at all, because the economy doesn't seem to really affect how I play at large at all anymore, anyway. So when these changes came in this week, it really didn't do much. I bought some stuff, didn't notice the fee.
It's only on sellers.
Bought, sold, you know what I mean.
Okay,
I've been doing both. And I enjoy that, you know, the death cost is lower, because, I mean, if I go somewhere, I'm going to die. That's just how that works. You know, I've never... I don't even think that we should even have a death cost in that way. There's other ways of doing stuff, but, you know, that's a topic for another day. I never necessarily saw the connection of why we, you know, needed the fee, but long story short, it just didn't make that big of a deal in my day-to-day play. I don't notice the fee when I'm selling, and if anything, I don't have to, you know, I can be a little bit more adventurous when it comes to combat, even though it's, you know,
not my primary thing.
Yeah.
You know, I bought some stuff, right? I picked up the new whip for
the Raptors Rampage, right?
Yeah, and I think I'm going to I need to figure out what that helmet is, because
Jaws of the Abyss.
Jaws of the Abyss, yeah. So I've already bought the set that David was telling me about. You know, I'm about a year and 6 months behind. But last thing I remember David telling me was, you know, the whole Animate Dead, Crypt Bloom, all that. I got that, so I'm ready to, you know, I can do that legacy thing. Now I've got to get the, you know, I'm working on the whip and the helmet and the spikes and, you know, all that kind of stuff, so I can do that. The sky didn't fall. Like, just nothing for me.
That's the thing. You don't notice it. You don't notice it, and it creates a benefit for more players than it creates a downside.
Yeah, I mean, it just didn't. You know, I took it. I was way more excitable hearing about it than actually having it happen and living through the change. It just didn't end up being as big of a deal as I thought it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. So what they did is they took that $69 billion and rounded it to 70, and then they said you do a 90% reduction, that would be $7 billion. 85% reduction, 10.5. 80% reduction, $14 billion, which would then leave a $56 billion gap to fill there. Or a $59.5 billion gap for the middle echelon and $63 billion for the top on that. And as a result of that, they went through a number of things, such as nerfing item to coin conversion, which would in effect result in lowering alchemy values for lowering the amount of gold added to the game. They could have nerfed alchemy machines, but both these plans were not viable. They said they could make a new gold sink, and that's not viable because they would need to be at the scale of 20 times Kingdom of Miscellanea to be beneficial without rewarding alchables.
I wanna pause on this one really quickly, Shane.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe something 20 times. Like, obviously, this couldn't completely overcome the delta, but. What's the reason we can't get another Kingdom quest where Kingdom, instead of sinking, what is it, 50k a day or something that it sinks, or 500k a day? I can't remember. I mean, why not make another Kingdom quest?
Right, because when you look at it that way, you know, 50k a day, and you multiply that by a factor of 20, I mean... That's something that people could afford, I think, when you roll it down at the end of the day, right?
As an Iron Man, something like Kingdom of Miscellanea, getting a new set of things that I could acquire that are resources, like higher tier fish, for example, to help with getting 120 cooking on an Iron Man, or something. Like, there are a lot of things that are come through the game through skilling, where a Kingdom style method of acquiring them would lower the value, but the GP per hour for fishing sharks in 2022 is so wildly low that I think that the impact of drastically lowering shark prices is also very low. Or maybe something that would increase the amount of hardwood that comes into the game as a result of Kingdom, because that's another resource. I don't know. It just seems like
You just do it by adding something onto ports. That's one of these gold sinks that takes, you know, a mill a day to operate.
Onto the traveling, or like put more stuff on the traveling merchant. That's really expensive.
But yeah, I think it's random. What was that, Tanis?
I can't shake the feeling that I feel like when you're talking about the alchemy machines, we're talking about hardwood, we're talking about shark, all this stuff, like, I don't feel like this is players. I am a neglectful landlord. I might see that Kingdom every couple months.
Yeah.
At best. So to me, this feels like there are farms out there that's doing this. It's not actually even the players. They're just screwing this up for everyone else. Something's out there running lots and lots and lots of accounts that's doing this shit. There's no way that it's individual.
So what you're saying then is it doesn't feel like that there's that many people playing RS to have the kind of impact things are having, then, is what you're saying.
No. No, it doesn't. Well,
I mean, 2.5 billion a day through Kingdom makes sense given how enormous of a factor Kingdom is for Iron Man. Like, the only way
that's
I can
true.
Ever get 200 mil construction or fishing on my Iron Man is through ports. Like, herbs are really important. Seeds are really important, especially in early game. Maple logs is really important for like 99 fletching and fire making. So I don't know what the number of active Iron Man are, but every single active Iron Man takes advantage of Kingdom religiously.
Hey, so, but they are sequestered by their very nature from the
that's
overall
true.
Economy.
Yeah, it is a good point to make that Iron Man are not contributing to gold sinks or
Feels something feels off to me because this is not my experience. This isn't anybody I talk to is doing this kind of stuff. So maybe I'm in my own filter bubble.
I mean, I go to my kingdom about once a month.
Yeah, once a month is about right. That's still
what? That's a drop. It's such a drop in the bucket,
right?
Man.
But you imagine that there's, you basically say this many people are going to be doing this, weekly or biweekly or monthly, combined by how many people are playing the game. I can see the kingdom pulling that kind of money.
Yeah, no one would make it all.
But the kingdom is the one example that actually is could be attributed to players, right? Because it's behind quest content and all that kind of stuff.
Which one do you not think would be attributed to players?
Well, I just proved it in Fresh Start Worlds. Give me a couple of weeks, I'll cruise right on through Invention to get me a couple Alk machines going. I mean, it doesn't take much. You could run farm of accounts or alts to be doing that. Like, that's the kind of stuff that's, to me, I suspect that is a much bigger problem than individual players making individual
Alk machines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty much thrilled if someone wants to make 50 accounts and buy 50 memberships so that they can run 50 Alk machines. Like, that seems good for subscriber numbers.
And I mean, if somebody wants to do that, there's nothing preventing them from doing that because you can now trade freely between all your accounts.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think alts are a bad thing for the game.
I don't think they're a bad thing either, because I don't think any of this is really necessary in the first place. But what I'm saying is, we also can't chalk it up as in these are individual people making individual decisions like a normal economy would be.
So what do you think's happening then? Because
I think there are basically, I don't think these are single player alts. These are alt farms. These are, what we used to call gold farmers. That's what this is. This is not because you have two or three accounts going. It's more systematic than that. It's bigger than that.
And then the question is
gold farming.
How much of this is actually, and if this is the case, and I feel like, for the better part of a decade now, we've had good bot detection and Jagex has been good about clamping down on gold sellers and whatnot. So
yeah,
it feels
bonds sort of went a long way
to prevent that, yeah.
To prevent that. And I don't care if people want to run however many accounts, like what David's saying. But at the same time, I also feel like, it's that turning around and putting the onus on us individual players saying, well, it's because of what you're doing. Things are the way they're. No, it's not because of what I'm doing. I'm not running 50 Alchemizer alt accounts. So it's not because of what I'm doing.
So what's the solution then?
I don't think that they're saying Alk machines are bad, though.
No, because they said...
I don't think anyone thinks Alk machines are bad.
Right.
I don't think it is putting the onus on individual
players. Right, and they said this,
not,
if they nerfed alchemy machines, it would partially close the gap. But alchemy machines are a convenient way to convert items to coins, but they're not the problem themselves, Jagex says. Even if we made them so expensive that they were not worth using, the items could still be converted to coins in other ways.
Yeah, I
by alking bots, which alk machines have done a huge amount to alleviate the problem of alk bots, I think.
So what would you put forward as a solution then to, let's say we want to, you know, reduce dev costs? Where would you cut the amount of money coming in? Would you just let it?
I'm not convinced you have to cut the amount of money coming in. No one has proven that to me for any reason. What happens
it sounded like we,
if you don't?
It sounded like you were convinced back when we discussed this with Earth in December.
No, he convinced me of a fee. But
I was operating under the assumption with that being okay with a fee, you were accepting the whole premise that you had to match what was being taken out with death cost somewhere else.
Isn't the reason because inflation is really bad for new and returning players because they make an account, get a membership, and then find out that in order to train half the skills, it's so much gold and they have no idea how to make money yet. And it's still not true, relatively hard.
I just spent 4 months going through from zero
in a fresh
everything.
Economy.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. You don't have to spend money. If you want to, you can. But you don't have to.
Yeah.
I mean, you're an Iron Man, you know.
Yeah, but I also have been playing the game for 15 years and know how to do everything super efficiently. But like I think that if in order to make an attack potion, you have to spend 50,000 coins and you're a brand new player. And you have no idea, like 50,000 coins seems like an absurd amount because your best money making method that you've discovered is like killing cows. Like I guess that it probably doesn't affect existing players that much because existing players with a lot of experience know how to make money. And so they're able to offset the cost of inflation. But I can imagine it being incredibly intimidating to find out that, you know, let's say GP per XP on Herb Lore becomes like 500 GP per XP. It's just no one is going to play a game that where it seems like training skills will take months in order to get to level
50. Where you can't get weapons at tier 80 plus.
Yeah, and that's the other
thing. We can fix that. Like, see, that to me, that's fixable. Right? Like, you want more weapons? More drops. There's no reason it has to be as exclusive and as rare as it is.
And I mean, we got one of those experiments running right now, Raptor's Rampage.
Right. What I'm saying, like, there's no, those are choices made. There's no reason it has to be that way. There's no reason why you should have to pay because you die. That's a choice that was made. Like,
so if we get rid of death costs, lower them substantially.
Mm-hmm.
And let the amount of money that was coming into the economy keep going, you wind up in a situation where the prices of things are going to go up and up and up, as they have been doing for so long, to the point where, you know, weapons are multiple billions. And then that ripples on through the entire economy with skilling supplies and such. And
well, why does that happen if you have ample supply, right? I mean, can't
we
deal with this from the supply side, Shane? Well, yeah,
we can pop as many
items in as we want.
So you're saying
they should add more items to the game.
You could.
Right.
I'm just saying that's an alternative.
So make it so like when you kill an aberrant specter, it drops 1,000 Renar noted or something. So you just have like infinite supplies. But like it just feels like that just turns it into like a player-made server where you just instantly acquire everything. Like I'm not
well,
sure that you
that's
should
how,
be able to.
That's how you're, but that's how you're looking at it. Like, if we're talking supplies, you know, think supplies probably should come through, you know, the skills that you do. Otherwise, there's not really much of a purpose for that skill.
Yeah, we got to figure out how that shakes out with farming after Garden of Charid.
Right. I mean, yeah, we'll see how that experiment goes. I don't know. The RuneScape's very unique in the way that it works like that. You don't see this system everywhere else. Like, I can't think of another game that punishes you for engaging in combat, which, you know, I guess early on it was a balanced part of the game, but anymore it seems to have taken over more and more of this game. So,
and you know, yeah. on that, I think that's a good time to move on to the actual death costs. Whereas, you know, previously you had an item that was valued between 1 and 10 million, it would be a 1% reclaim, maximum 90K. Or if it was more than 10 million, it would be 0.5% with a maximum reclaim value per item of 10.6 mil. Whereas with the new death costs, it's a flat 0.1% reclaim. So an item, theoretically, that was worth 500 mil would only cost you 500K. To reclaim, whereas on main, prior to this week, it would have been 2.5 mil. 50 mil item, used to be 320K, now it's 50K. Max cash stack item, 10.8 mil used to be to reclaim that, now 2.1 mil.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an 80% decrease in the cost for that. And with that, death costs, I feel, have hit the floor with this to the point where it's not really punishing anymore on this here of what we have now compared to what we had previously. David, you've been the one PVMing this week, and you know, switches and whatnot. I know you use those. How do you feel now with the death cost being substantially lowered?
I mean, for me, it's fantastic because the punishment for a server lag or for Wi-Fi issues or, you know, like it for a long time, it's been the case that a game where if you're playing on a population where there's 200 or more players, you experience a pretty enormous amount of lag, which can make a big deal given the way that RS3 combat works.
Yeah.
And so having a system where you're severely punished for playing, It's like the game punishes you for playing at peak times. And that has been a very strange phenomenon for a while now. I'm sure that, you know, everyone has seen the popularity of using VPNs to get onto alternative language servers to deal with the lag issues. But the combination of severe lag and death cost being punishing has been pretty bad, and it feels really good that there's
what would one of your average death costs run you before the update, and what are we at now?
Well, so on Iron Man, probably around 5 to 6 mil, because I don't have anything close to a max setup on my Iron Man still, and now probably well below a mil, maybe 600-700K. And then on a main, when I used to PVM on there, I would have much closer to a max setup, and my graves were probably around 15 to 16 mil. And I'm not 100% sure where they would fall now, but I imagine it would be a pretty dramatic reduction in cost. And I know with absolute peak setups, grave costs were easily hitting above 20 mil, getting into the 30 mil range, which is just, you know, feels really, really bad. To die and have to spend that much, especially when you get to a point in PVM where you very rarely die to mistakes and almost always die because of servers not being very good on this game.
And I hate to say it, that's the way it goes. And you're 100% right that you die the most when you're learning the boss. And then after that, it's due to your computer or the connection.
Correct. Yeah.
So
almost always. And so basically it punishes people for wanting to learn a new boss. And it punished people for server issues, which were not their fault. And it is good that the game no longer punishes you for its own bad server problems, and the game no longer punishes you for trying new content.
And, you know, I feel like if I would have had a different week here this week, in that if I, you know, just decided to go out and do what I was going to do, and it was just a motivation problem of, you know, do I continue working on this Yak Track archaeology task, or do I go and, you know, perk out the magic armor set? I chose to continue with archaeology. Had I done that, I would have been willing to, you know, just go out and try some more interesting things rather than, you know, the usual things that I would have did back while PVMing. So I agree that, and, you know, I'm gonna say this, Tanis. You were talking about removing the barrier to PVM, removing the punishing of you dying, and I feel like this accomplishes that. And it would be interesting to have your perspective once you start doing more PVM. You mentioned you got your Melee set and you got your Crypt Bloom and whatnot. And if you go to more PVM bosses, it would be interesting to hear if it feels like death is a barrier to you now.
Well, it's not as bad. I mean, it's to a point to where things that I didn't do before because I just didn't want to pay for it. I tried this week, and, you know, to decent, I mean, mixed results, right? I'm never going to be good at PVM, but I did some God Wars 2 on mobile.
Good.
I think mobile worked really well for me.
Legacy or EOC?
EOC.
Okay.
Full rev, but with the exception of, you know, having really little small health bar, it was a lot easier for me to move and get around. That's something I've been wanting to try to do, but I didn't do because it costs too much for me to die. And I don't have the best equipment or anything like that. It's just, I also don't have like tons of money either. So I work for a living. I do skills.
I feel like it has accomplished what it needed to.
Right.
So, that's a success on that part, just in terms of how everything was brought down. You can see the full changes in the dev blog they posted with the tables and whatnot. I want to talk about the Ring of Death right now. So this was also changed with this update. And I want to get some interesting thoughts going on about this, because I just feel like this is something that needed a bit more massaging before it went out. So with this, the Ring of Death will no longer teleport you to safety. Instead, you get the opportunity to finish your kill and or escape. Upon dying, you will revive at full health. You'll get 3 minutes of quick hitting damage over time effect. The damage this deals will increase with every hit, meaning it increases by 100% of the base hit every minute, and after 3 minutes, the damage will stop, and there will be a cooldown of 3 minutes before it can activate again. The effect and cooldown can be cleared by entering any bank or praying at the altar in War's Retreat. This will take effect before things like the Sign of Life or similar kick in, and signs will work while the dot is dealing damage, and other reviving effects such as the Immortality ability will also work with this combination. Okay. David, Ring of Death thoughts? I assume, given the kind of PVMer you were, you never really used Ring of Death before, right?
Let me think. There were some places where it would be useful as a switch.
Okay.
Doing like group content and enough people died that it was no longer viable to finish the kill, and you couldn't teleport out. So that there aren't that many places like that, but like for a long time you couldn't teleport out at Virago. That was a relatively recent change. So
yeah,
when I was learning how to do trio hard mode and four-man hard mode, if someone died, usually that meant the kill was a fail, and the only way to get out was to lobby, which wasn't always viable. So sometimes you'd bring a Ring of Death and put it on just to get to safety. I use a Ring of Death for some stuff now, though, just because it's relatively high bonuses. If my Reaver's Ring doesn't work at a boss because accuracy is off, then I'll use Ring of Death usually, just because on my Iron Man, that's my best option. Right. I don't have any of the other rings from Daggonoth Kings.
Fair. And it's worth noting that if you remove the ring, the bleed immediately triples in size, so you can't get away from it. And then there are just some weird edge cases with this. In particular, if you get eaten at Yankamaru, if you're the poison tank or you're catching double, that will clear the Ring of Death bleed effect. Also, hard transitions at places like Virago, Telos Phase 4 to 5, you said, Araxor versus Araxi, those completely wipe the bleed.
Yeah, so it seems like instances where the arena changes or the boss itself changes are considered to be hard phase transitions. So jumping through one floor to the next in Virago, like you said, Araxor to Araxi, and then phase 4 to phase 5 Telos, I guess because Telos like fundamentally changes because he falls into the crater in the arena.
And then...
different, yeah.
And then we get to the point where we have the other kind of soft phase transitions, and the best example of this, I think, is the Telos phase 1 through 3 transitions, where if you activate...
One through four.
If you activate your Ring of Death proc on that, it keeps going through that animation, and you could wind up dead during that.
Yeah, the first thing I did... was some 999s because I figured the Ring of Death would basically make me invincible. And I find those to be, at this point in my PVM career, that's like a good happy medium for relatively relaxing and while still being somewhat challenging. But I was doing those and I took a large hit from one of the mechanics and it procced my Ring of Death. And then I took a little bit more damage and then the phase transition. So I was at maybe 4K health when the transition happened and the bleed continued during the transition. And you obviously don't have access to your interfaces, so you can't eat during that transition. And as soon as I spawned on phase 3, I was already dead because the bleed effect had killed me during the animation for the transition and I couldn't heal from it.
So
if a sign had procced instead of the ring, I would have lived. But because it was the ring that procced, I just like died.
The thing I think we want to highlight on this is that it should be consistent. Either remove the bleed on all these transitions or don't. And I'm going to leave that to people on the Combat Council to decide which way to go on that. Or maybe this is the way it's designed. I don't know. I haven't heard anything. Either way on that, I think that'd be an interesting conversation to have on this or to hear about at least. But if I was deciding which way to go, I'd say just clear the bleed since we're already doing that on some of these transitions.
Yeah, I mean, for some things they would have to. Like if you got cleaved at Araxor on phase 3 and took a little bit of damage, the amount of time that you go from phase 3 to phase 4 takes so long that you would die every single time.
Yeah,
didn't remove the... Like, you would always die. So I think that if it is going to be consistent, it has to be remove always. If it's not consistent, then you just have to have that knowledge and make sure you don't accidentally phase Telos...
with your ring
after...
on.
Well, you could do it, but you just have to make sure you're like 10, 11K HP so that you can survive that bleed effect. Because I do think that if you're max HP, you can survive. If you're using Crypt Bloom, obviously you can survive.
And that takes us to the next point on this, is that Anime
Crypt
Dead...
Crypt Bloom means you survive anything.
Anime Dead reduces the amount of bleed damage on this substantially. I don't know if that's intended or not. And if it is, or if it is not, maybe... make it so that the Ring of Death bleed hits through Crypt Bloom. I don't know, because if you're using, or sorry, not Crypt Bloom, Animate Dead, if you're using Animate Dead, this bleed is like nothing.
Well, Animate Dead, you know, the way that it's intended is to reduce all incoming damage of everything. I mean, it's just a typeless bleed. Animate Dead reduces typeless damage. So I imagine that in order to code something so it wouldn't work with Animate Dead, that would probably be really difficult to do from... I'm not a developer, obviously, so I don't know for sure. But given that every other instance of typeless damage in the game it does work for. I'm not really sure what it would look like to create a unique exception to that.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe you have an idea of what.
No,
that would look like.
No, I don't know. I don't know what RuneScript looks like on that. So I wouldn't know what that would be. But once again, Anime Dead, very strong. And then,
oh yeah, incredible.
Just for context's sake, if you weren't using Anime Dead, you'd basically need to eat through an entire yakful of sailfish to survive the bleed. That's how much damage we're talking about with this. So just keep this in mind as you use the new Ring of Death. We'll leave it out to the listeners whether or not it's a good change, bad change, or if there needs to be changes regarding phases or the use of Anime Dead on this. But overall, happy with it? Yes, no, maybe so?
I think it's another thing that just makes PVM more accessible. I think the fact that it's even more powerful when used with Anime Dead is not a bad thing, because Anime Dead is almost never the optimal way to kill something.
Yep.
The other thing that's really nice is that there are many bosses now where by far the most dangerous part happens at the very end. Zamorak 100 Enrage Plus is the best example of this. Signing, if you're a learner and you sign on phase 7 at Zamorak, you probably die because your sign takes away all your adrenaline and sign is almost always death there, especially when you're new. The fact that Ring of Death, we didn't mention this, but you keep all of your adrenaline, all of your buffs, nothing changes. It's as if nothing happened except your screen goes gray, which I don't like. I think it's like so hard for me to see things when my screen goes gray and blurry like that.
Oh, wow. That'd be a fun one for you. No, I haven't used it yet. And
yeah,
boy, that'd be a fun one. Tannis?
It looks like you go into
that's
like...
what I was thinking. Uh-oh.
It's like, you know, if you've seen Lord of the Rings, you know when like Frodo puts the ring on and like everything is all weird and blurry and gray and like he sees wraiths and stuff. Do you know what I'm talking about, Shane?
No, I've never seen those shows.
Okay. Well, anyways, it looks like you like put the one ring on and everything just goes all blurry and hazy. It's very strange. Yeah, it's like when you're doing the quest where you meet the Devourer and the Devourer makes like your screen all hazy, it looks like that. But anyways, it's very, very good, because if you're learning Zamorak and you're on phase 7, it's extremely easy to make a mistake and die. But with the Ring of Death, you're probably much more likely to live, because that bleed doesn't do that much damage initially. It's towards the end of the Ring of Death 3-minute timer that the damage really starts to stack up. And so theoretically you should be done with the kill by the time, you know, by the time like the Ring of Death really starts damaging you. So it's much more likely you get the kill. And it's really nice, because it always feels bad to spend all your time getting to the last phase and then die on the final phase. Telos is another great example of this. It's really easy to...
Oh, yeah, that's how I felt with Hard Mode Karapak, now that you mention it.
Yeah, yeah. So Hard Mode Karapak is another really good example. Phase 4 is way more dangerous than 1 through 3. At Telos, for most people, phase 4 is the hardest by the time you're more experienced, but when you're inexperienced, phase 5 is definitely the hardest. So most of the time, there's not that much HP left on the boss when you're most likely to die, and it's towards the end. And so this can definitely help you clutch out kills and survive and get your reward. And it's another thing that makes it more accessible. And the fact that it's even better with Crypt Bloom just means end game PVM is even easier to learn. And there
once again,
where
once again, we're relying on the Ring of Death, the lower death costs, Animate Dead, and Crypt Bloom as a gateway in, which is a very, very narrow path that doesn't exist with range, doesn't exist with melee, is locked behind multiple quests, locked behind high-end equipment. Granted, of course, you can still use Animate Dead to great efficiency
you can use
ports tank armor, but you get the idea.
Yeah, or Ganoderme is still phenomenal, because it's Animate Dead that is the real king. Crypt Bloom is just like a cherry on top. It's good, but it's not as good as Animate Dead itself is.
I think we've just described what the state of RSPVM is in 2023 in this episode, by the way. I feel like we're done and we can come back at the end of the year and see if anything's changed.
if you want to learn how to do content, use magic and take advantage of how good Animate Dead is and use Learning of Death. Like, you, is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And by the way, while we're on this train, let's make invention perks tradable so I don't need to bash my head.
Yeah, wall. We were talking about this in the pre-show. Yeah. I'm a big fan of tradable invention perks because you really could. It really would be a
it's just a time sink, right? Like, I wanted to go PVMing this week, but I don't have a set of magic power armor with perks on it, and I don't want to go through all the, like, I know how to do the research, I know what perks I want, I just don't want to go through the research and then get the components and then put them on.
Yeah,
and all that.
Well, you should have made your perks during the like 24 hours where Shattered Worlds was insta.
Yeah.
Level 9 gear.
Yeah, I saw that.
Because that was so wild. You could get something from level 1 to 9 in like 3 minutes. It was very funny.
Yeah.
So the last thing for the Ring of Death we didn't mention is some seeming inconsistency for how it deals with insta-kill mechanics.
Oh, I don't know if you want to talk about right. that. Yes, yeah, I did want to talk about that. That was supposed to be on the notes.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was
going to be. That's why I was asking you about that earlier today, and then I realized... I forgot to put that in the notes. Thank you for that. So what is it? What is this? And in reality, this should have been when we were talking about the edge cases of the transitions.
Yeah.
And whatnot. But what does this do for things like the Zuck final pizza phase thing?
Yeah. So this is not a term of art that I could find anywhere. But for ease of reference, I would say that there are soft insta-kills and hard insta-kills. Soft insta, and the way that you know the difference from a game coding perspective is ones that proc assign and ones that don't. So there are some insta kill mechanics, like Telos, for example. So on Telos phase 5, you might know that you either have to kill the boss before the font fills all the way up, or bring minions over to the font to fill the font with energy in order to turn that insta kill off, or you get insta killed, right? Those are the three things that can happen on phase 5. Is you kill it faster than the energy fills, you prevent the insta kill by bringing minions to the proper font and killing them next to the font so that the font siphons the energy from the minions instead of siphoning the energy from the player. Or you get insta-killed. I'm not sure. Is that a mechanic you knew about, Jane?
No, I've never done P5 Telos.
Okay, well, so that's how Phase 5 Telos works.
All right.
But you can bypass this entirely by using immortality. So if you can't kill the boss fast enough, you can ignore fonting minions by simply using immortality prior to the insta-kill. And there's a big charge for the insta-kill. It comes at you.
That immortality protects you.
Correct.
And that's what we're defining as a soft insta-kill.
Correct. So things where a sign of life or immortality will protect you. So things that do not end the fight, right? So that insta-kill does not end the fight. It simply does so much damage. Like, you know, let's just pretend it's 10 million damage. It does 10 million damage to the player. Let's just throw out a random number like that. It's not survivable. With anything other than immortality or a sign. That's a soft insta-kill. It's basically just an infinite damage button. The other type of insta-kill is one where the fight just ends if it's triggered. So,
and that's when it shows the insta-kill icon, right?
Well, so it shows the... this is why it's confusing. Because it will show the insta-kill icon at Telos if the insta-kill is triggered. Or at Yakamaru... it will show the insta kill.
CPR the person.
Correct. Yeah. But if you notice, if you forget to CPR someone, that you all 10 players at Yakimaru see that big insta kill, and that player gets up and starts attacking the boss. Why? Because they had a sign.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that's a soft insta kill. It does not end the fight. It simply does so much damage to the player that it's considered an insta kill. That is, it is unblockable, but it is survivable because of signs of life and immortality. So does that type of insta-kill make sense with that context?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Okay, so the other type is one where the fight simply ends. So the best example is Solak. If Solak dies inside of the Mind Realm, Shadow Realm, Aerith Realm, whatever you want to call it, because the wizards in that realm have killed Solak, the fight is over. you could have a sign of life and immortality, whatever you want. It doesn't matter. The fight is done. So you are dead. That is a hard insta-kill mechanic. The other one, I think, is at Zuck.
Yep, I was going to go there.
After clearing the three minions on what people refer to as pizza phase, yep. there is a button that appears. If you do not hit that button in time, you are insta-killed. It does not matter if you have an immortality. It does not matter if you have a sign of life. The fight is done. So the Ring of Death will not save you from those, but it will save you from soft insta-kill mechanics. And so if you are at Telos and you don't font minions in time and you don't have enough adrenaline for immortality, which is a rare set of circumstances if you have any semblance of mechanics knowledge, but if that set of things occurs, or if you're super under-geared, you immort the first font, you get to the second font, there's still HP on the boss. Normally that would just be a death, but you know, because your immortality won't have come off cooldown by then, so you can't immortality again. The Ring of Death should trigger and save your life for those forms of insta-kills. Something interesting is Yakamaru solos are now more doable because before you would have to wait an hour for your sign to come back by just like stalling. So you would just like stall with a bola or something on a jelly for an hour while your sign of life came back, and then you sign again when getting the poison. But now you could use the Ring of Death every 3 minutes. It would still be a ton of food that you would have to eat through, but if you're soloing Yakamaru, you'd probably be using Crypt Bloom.
Maybe that's something I should try given my 27-minute Zamorak survival time.
Yeah, well, soloing Yak is kind of tough. I've done duo Yakamaru back in like 2017, I think. But you know, it doesn't matter. But basically, like, it would take a long time for.
And the point I want to bring forward on this is that these distinctions about where it works and where it doesn't work should have been made clear somewhere, whether in the dev post or somewhere where you can see it in game. Because with this, we're just going off of people experimenting and then imparting their knowledge through places like PVME and the wiki eventually.
Yeah.
So
it'd be also, I mean, my perspective on this is that is the ideal model for me would be to not call things that aren't actually insta-kills that end the fight insta-kills. Like that big mechanic that comes up for Yakamaru.
Yeah.
Get rid of that and replace it with something else. Like, I don't know, if you get insta-killed because no one frees you on sand, you get a big message that's like, LOL, no one freed this player from sand, get wrecked. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
But like, it should be called a different thing. So then the Ring of Death could be consistent, because you could say Ring of Death does not save you from insta-kills. All the quote-unquote insta-kills that Ring of Death saved you from prior are now just called like Unstoppable Blow or something like that.
Yeah.
Unblockable force of energy or whatever is like what pops up on your screen.
And that's the thing. It's a game of consistency, but I get why it's not like that, because we're dealing with a 20-year-old plus MMO at this point in time. So
yeah. And it's a very good thing, by the way, that Ring of Death does not work for hard insta-kills, because if at Solak you could let Solak die in the mine realm and
break
then you
the
have
boss.
3 minutes to kill it. Yeah. So it would just fundamentally break the mechanic. I mean, whether insta-kills are good or bad for the game is a totally different debate, but like within our current framework, we have them. And so I just think that we should more clearly distinguish between insta-kills that end fights and those that don't, and call the insta-kills that don't something that is different.
I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Tanis, anything else on Ring of Death or death in general before I move on to other things?
No, I'm curious to see if this is... Do you think it will have any effect on Onyx whatsoever?
That's a good question. It's a good question. Because
Onyxes should be used way less, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because now it just degrades over time like anything else, instead of using a ton of charge every time you died. So I imagine so the adventure, prices of onyxes would go down substantially. Yeah, I'd imagine they go down quite a lot.
Yeah, I was just curious. That was my first kind of the first thing that came to mind when I saw those changes. I'm like, huh. I wonder how all that's gonna work with onyx.
Yeah. By far the biggest onyx sink just got deleted from the game. So I would expect onyxes to swiftly.
Hey, maybe we can use onyx bolts now.
Well, I suppose they're not particularly great.
No,
I don't know why you would compared to.
You told me to bring them somewhere we went last year. I forget where that was.
I think it's just because onyx bolts make things slightly more survivable. So onyx bolts are a good thing, I think, when you're learning a brand new boss and onyx bolts work, but they're not something you should use past your first couple kills. There's almost always something superior. Right.
Okie dokie then. I'm going to thank Patreon supporters for the first time of the year because December had a full slate of Patreon offerings. You guys saw the fruits of the clip show that these guys had been aware of since the beginning. You saw our monthly bit on holiday events, and Patreon supporters also got access to a behind-the-scenes article, a behind-the-scenes post covering RSBMB Update Producers Chat, where we discuss and put forward some of the things we're looking at for the show throughout the entire year. So we, in effect, did a clip show of our chat behind-the-scenes that Patreon supporters were able to get access to. So that, amongst many other things. And we do have a monthly bit coming down the pipe, which should, fingers crossed, be delivered to you guys next week, end of next week, talking about alts in RuneScape, which is a timely topic, isn't it, Tanis?
It is.
But, of course, this week I'd like to thank Alaska, Amos Reed, Anatoly D, Andrew C, Arvids L, Aubrey A, Beekeeper Steve, Bryflex, Big Huge Rat, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Duramax, Elo Matey, Enrique V, Free Milk, G. Hami, Guy LaFleur, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Jim M., Keski, Ling01, Malinoric, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G., OTR Gamer, Parnassius, Ricky A., RS Nerd Herd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirt Pants, Stab Eve, Tanner JW, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V., Zant, and Zazakon. Thank you, everybody, your support truly means the world to us. And if you're wondering what we're talking about, that's Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/RSBNB. There you can sign up for as little as $1 a month. And with that, you get a mention in our show notes. You help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update, and you gain access to an entire back catalog of monthly bits, including last month's holiday event special and this month's discussion that's going to be happening on Altscape. We also do have a $3 a month tier, the VIP tier, where you get a special rank on Discord, chat channel access, and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month. In addition to that, also high quality stereo versions of the podcast, in addition to everything else. And if you want to give the ultimate gift, we have our $5 a month plan, where you get a shout out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, which is a long way away now. At this point, I feel like last year's clip show was definitely one for the record books. One that had the most clips, I think, since 2018, and some clips that were a little bit too out there to share with the public. Ain't that right, Tanis?
A little edgy, huh, Shane?
And it wasn't me. It was you.
As always, for sure.
But if you
all in it.
If you want more of that, if you want our roundtables as well, which will be happening fairly soon this month, details posted at patreon.com/RSBNB. Just sign up for as little as $1 a month. You get access to that and everything that we talked about, roundtables, monthly bits, everything, and our new inside update features, which is also going to be returning this month as well. So thanks so much, everybody. Good to be back after bit of a break, and hopefully you guys enjoyed the slate of podcasts that we produced over the Christmas and holiday season. Thanks so much, everyone. All right.
Somebody.
Raptors Rampage. David says I should be taking advantage of this. Tanis, have you been taking advantage of this?
I haven't gotten anything good.
Okay.
But yeah. Which, you know, par for the course.
This is the buff that rolls three times on the boss's rare loot table. So for things like Vindicta, that would be for the lance. For things like Carapac, that would be staff pieces. For Ambi, that would be the stock or the crossbow parts and whatnot. That's where the crossbow comes from, the blights, right? What do people go to Ambi for, David? Forget.
Ambassador is for the Eldritch
crossbow pieces. Okay.
The two-handed one. Yeah. The blight bounds come from
Solak. Right. Okay. Yeah. Have you got anything good from this?
I have not. I've done one hard mode Carapac kill because I didn't have time to do Zuck, but I'm doing the hard mode Zuck thing that pretty much everyone is doing who could do hard mode Zuck. Yeah. It's probably worth it for normal mode Zuck. I will say, I did a normal mode Zuck kill on my Iron Man recently just because I accidentally went to normal mode instead of hard mode and realized a little while in that was the case, and I just decided I'd finish it. It is really, really trivial with Crypt Bloom and Animate Dead. I was kind of stuck because I remember being like somewhat difficult on release, but if you have never done normal mode Zuck because it seemed too difficult and you have access to Ganoderma or better tank armor and Animate Dead, this is a great opportunity to try it out because the triple drop rate is so good for bosses where the numerator on drops is low. So like Ambassador and Zuck are the two best.
Right.
And if one hard mode Zuck a day seems out of reach for you, one normal mode Zuck a day could be really, really good because I think it's 1 in 100 for the drops there.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so it becomes right. More like 1 in 33.
And we saw the prices of Magma Tempest already dropping as a result of this.
Yeah, but it's still, what, 650 mil or something? Fairly good drop.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I would definitely encourage anyone who is on the precipice for normal mode Zuck to give it a try, because even if it takes you an hour to get a kill, that 1 in 33 shot at something so high value is a pretty unique opportunity. And then, yeah, so like hard mode Zuck, normal mode Zuck, and Ambassador and are probably the best uses. Maybe Elite Dungeon 2 would also be a good use case. If you're doing the Elite Dungeons, make sure to not gain favor until you've reached Blackstone Dragon or Ambassador respectively, and then teleport out and then gain the favor so you don't proc the favor on one of the other bosses.
Right. It's also worth noting that they don't work on bosses with streak mode, so it won't work on things like Archglacier or Telos.
Yeah, that's right.
Also doesn't work on raids bosses, though it does consume the buff presently. Presumably that will be fixed at some point in the future on that. So
yeah, it works. It seems to work strangely at Araxor. Data is anecdotal and there's not enough information.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
But it seems like it rolls for each hilt independently and leg independently, because hilt rates are triple leg rates. And if you didn't know, probably because of all the Fresh Start World accounts who want tier 90s, Araxor weapons have skyrocketed. The staff and bow are in the 300s, and the scythe is well over 400. And so,
lovely.
Yeah, so Araxor drops are extremely valuable. I imagine that they've come down a little bit because of this, but
maybe that's where I need to go. That's my Reaper presently.
Yeah, like if Araxor is more your speed than Zuck, although I don't think normal mode Zuck is that much harder than Araxor, but people might disagree.
It's a time commitment.
It's a bigger time commitment. Yeah, like what I do if I don't have time is hard mode Carapac, because that's about 4 or 5 minutes and I could just get that done, and it makes 1 in 450 turn into 1 in 50 or something, or 1 in 450 per pile. I don't know how it works, but whatever. It's triple the rate, so it's clearly pretty good. If that isn't something you could do, then maybe Araxor would be a really good use for this.
And failing that, you were saying just, you know, something like God Wars 2, Vindicta.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like go to Vindicta and try your luck for a staff piece.
Yeah, and I mean, there's something for everybody in this, and I feel like this needs to be one of the great experiments that's happening to see what kind of impact just increasing drop rates by a factor of three would have, right? Because we know Mod Jack has said that things are, you know, stupidly rare if you just PVM once in a blue moon, or sorry, if you PVM every day, and they're really, really, really rare if you only PVM every so often. So I'd like to see the data that comes out of this, and maybe we can buff some drop rates as a result of this. So okay, I'm just gonna
last suggestion is, if you have Death Touch darts and you can't kill Ambassador but you can get to Ambassador, it's a pretty good use case, to because it does work with Death Touch darts, so you can go through Ambassador or go up to Ambassador, teleport out, grant favor, grab a Death Touch dart, Ambassador, and then you have a really, really high shot at a crossbow piece, which I think are still around a bill or something.
Well, there you go. All right. Let's talk about Frank's free chest. This is a weird one. Not gonna lie. Every hour you play, you get a key. You can get up to 12 keys a week. So for people who play more than 12 hours a week of RS, you're gonna get all the keys. And you give the keys to Frank in Port Sarum, and come January 31st, you'll be able to open the chest, and you'll get as many rolls on the chest as you gave keys. And we're talking about things like coins of 100 mil drop, oddments, Uncharted Isle maps, green or red, pirate hooks for your left or right hand, dragon pickaxes, mattocks, hatchets, and scimitars, clue scrolls, crystal and alchemist keys, crystal triskelions, two trait animal crates, farm animals, ports resources, fixate charges, wicked hood teleports, VIP coupons, gift for the reaper, aura refresh, dungeoneering wildcard, elemental and catalytic anima stone, felstock, torstall, wergali seeds, okay, dinosaur bones, impious ashes, charms, white berries, god wine, swamp toads, bird meat, raw beef, water orbs, planks, mahogany, antique, pure essence, and soft clay. Is this just an opportunity to add things to the game that they feel are in too short supply? Is that all this is?
That kind of makes sense, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing we've learned in this episode is we could all use 100 mil. The game really needs more of that to come in.
Actually, if you look at this, the Dragon Matic is something that everyone should be using two of because of how much more efficient it makes that skill, and it's relatively rare in how it comes in the game.
Yes,
despite. Like, I think Big Game Hunter is really fun, but before I had to get my own Maddox on my Iron Man, I thought it was miserable. Like, Big Game Hunter for me was one of those things that was horrible for the first couple hours, but once I figured out how to really do it, I actually found it really fun. So I feel like not that many people do Big Game Hunter. And then the runes are a disaster in terms of how expensive they are. It's like, we don't have enough time to get into it.
Well, there's no runes on this list.
Well, yes, there are. The elemental and catalytic runes.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's runes.
No, you gotta
be used for runes.
Yeah, you gotta use that to make runes, though. It's not direct runes.
But catalytic anima stone represents an additional, you know, 500 whatever soul runes or blood runes can be in the game. So that's good. And then Felstock, Torstal, and Wurgly seeds are all relatively uncommon, especially Wurgly seeds.
Yeah.
So, like, as an Iron Man, I really like this drop table because
that's a good perspective to have.
Every single thing on this drop table is something that is either hard for me to get or really annoying to get. So, like, soft clay and pure essence, annoying to get. Planks, bird meat, raw beef. Obviously, I use those constantly. Those are all really hard to get. So I think it's everything here is really good to me because it's all stuff that Iron Man would want. And I think that if the game is balanced around stuff Iron Man would want, that's usually pretty good.
Yeah, also, and they even balance the numbers. You get 50 Wine of Gothics, 50 Wine of Zamorak, but only 15 Wine of Ceridoman.
Yep. Although Wine of Gothics are worth a ton now.
Because change they made in December.
Yeah, because now Super Gothics restores are really, really good. So that's kind of a little bit out of whack. It should probably be like 25 or something, but whatever. I won't.
Interesting.
Yeah. I feel like we glossed over a little bit over the big payoff from this.
What,
chance.
The 100 mil?
No, the 100 mil is nothing. Gene, the Uncharted Island map Red. What do you
okay,
mean?
Okay, all right, fair.
An Uncharted Island map Red is like, what, 6.5, 7 bills, something like that?
That's true.
Yeah, because that's Tavia's fishing rod, and those are way, 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 way over max cash. So, that's the huge payoff for this chest, is I wonder what the rate is on that, because that's like a 5 bill drop.
Yeah, and we're not going to know until...
We'll probably never know, until
the community starts gathering data, which the RS Wiki can do. And I mean, all you got to do is just play and then dump your keys with Frank, and then at the end of the month, you see what he's got for you. So
do you have to dump them per week, or can you wait till January 30th and dump them?
I've been dumping them weekly, so I don't know if you can have more than 12. Somebody else will have to answer that question.
I currently have 18 keys on my iron.
Okay, so you're fine then. So it's only 12 you can get per week then. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. And with that, we move on into patch notes. Only a few this week. The drop rate of Acto armor in raids is no longer bound to owning the normal armor sets. So what this means is players who previously had the non-Acto version of the armor obtained would have had an increased chance of getting that Acto piece. This restriction has been removed, and now the better drop rate just applies naturally.
Yeah. So this makes raids slightly more rewarding.
Yeah, because now what you can use, now you pretty much just use the non-Acto versions for the rumbling components, and these armor pieces were already pretty common as they were. So this is going to be nice on here.
And
I just think raids, if you can do it consistently, is one of the money makers that has the smallest amount of variance to it, you know, given the codex is always hover around 45, 50 mil.
Yeah, and now you could use techie. When you're first starting out raids, you have to use your techie to buy, if assuming you care about getting Acto, most people will use their techie to buy the non-Acto pieces to make their grind shorter. Now you can use that techie to directly buy codices.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't need rumbling components, remember that you could have a friend kill you in the red portal for the cash value of the non-Acto pieces and then have them trade you the money.
Yeah,
over.
I should or do that now at this point. I should do that.
Yeah, or you could use an alt. You could use an alt and kill yourself. Remember, like, obviously, it's dangerous. So theoretically, don't bring something you care about losing.
Yeah, I know. I've done this before.
I don't want to turn this into a lure podcast. Yeah, you know, you get an extra 5% if you bring a P-hat set in, trust me. But you have to PM me first. You have to PM me and have a P hat set, and then the buff will activate. And then you have to give me 5 minutes to get over there so I can watch, and then I'll be good. Yeah.
All right. The Guthixian High Druid in World Wakes could set or clear the World Guardian title. This has fully been removed now, and Noom can also no longer clear titles. There's your patch notes of the week, everyone. Very, very tiny. All right. Tanis, Fresh Start Worlds is over.
Yeah, bummer.
And we got a survey. And we plan on doing a deeper retrospective into Fresh Start. And I want to just kind of wade our feet ankle deep in this right now, because I feel like there's a lot we could go into on this. There's a survey. It asks if you played Fresh Start, you played it on RS3 or OS. And you can fill out everything about this. So some questions they ask: what made you interested in playing Fresh Start Worlds? Which aspects of Fresh Start Worlds did you enjoy? Which buffs were most useful? Which skill capes were you attempting to get? Did you actively participate in the 8-week competition as part of Fresh Start Worlds? What did you like about Fresh Start Worlds? What did you dislike? And would you consider playing a future limited time game mode again in the future? And, you know, you can say pretty much anything under the sun for any of these answers. And the things that I wanted to personally hone in for in the direction that my survey answers took on this was that I said, for me, that the game was infinitely more fun when we didn't have Treasure Hunter involved in here. And everybody was working from that, you know, ground level, so to speak. So there was that angle of it. I also said that the game mode would have been better had they said what the XP rates were going to be going up, and more importantly, what they were going to be coming down, because I feel like that's something that bit numerous of us in terms of changing how we would have played. Because I think you and many other people said, and myself included, said we would have played differently if we knew what the rates were going to be coming down.
Yeah.
Right. So I relayed that feedback. I ordered the buffs in terms of what I thought was most useful. I liked the spear. I liked the auras. I liked the armor. I liked the ability to have the extra accuracy, all that other fun stuff in there like that. I said that, you know, I did participate in the competitive period, but it would have been nice to have a game mode without a competitive period, because I feel like that's something that it feels like, once again, it feels like we kind of mesh these two things together, a competitive game mode and something where we were all just supposed to, you know, be playing the game from the ground levels sort of thing. And I said one of the things that I disliked about Fresh Start Worlds, and this is something that's kind of come to me over time as we've moved past it, is that a lot of the changes that they made to it were for the sake of pacifying people who were never going to play in the first place, right? Like reducing the XP rates, changing the start date, that sort of thing. Yep. When in reality, I think I would have got the 120s done that I wanted to get done had we had the higher XP rates.
Yep.
I don't know how many of those people who said they weren't going to play or got pissed off about the XP rates took part. And if that number's low, then, well, they shouldn't have made decisions for those people. And I think at the end of the day, I would go back because I feel like I got to get that 120 archaeology done in the proper way. More on that in a bit. So.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of that. You know, I'm not far enough away from it to really not have liked anything. I mean, I had a great experience, really enjoyed it. One of the great things for me, I mean, I know it's all about, you know, starting over and playing with your friends again, all this, but I kind of also enjoyed the fact of kind of learning that I didn't need the GE. I didn't need these things to be able to play the game. And I enjoyed that. So that was, that was fun for me. I probably should have done that years ago, but, I liked just about everything there was to it. I didn't get super competitive when it come to the competitive mode. I went into it planning on not doing that, because I really didn't think that I could be competitive with, you know, working and everything like that. That being said, I enjoyed it, you know, perfectly fine. I got all my enjoyment out of it. I would have liked to had the higher XP rates. To me, that was one of the exciting things. I think RuneScape XP is slow. I think it's a grind. I think we're in a new era. That made it funner for me. I don't think we're in the same days where it should take 2-3 years to level off an account.
That was one of the major surprises to me was just how fast it was.
Yeah,
if you were playing with like extreme levels of efficiency, the speed that you could level in faster, it was just unbelievable how fast people maxed, for example.
Yeah, but for every, you know, handful of people that did that, there were, you know, a lot of others that may have gotten 120 or like myself, or trying to get, you know, 99s. I just compare it to, you know, other games you're not going to be spending 2 or 3 years trying to max out an account.
Right, and then that makes our end game discussion all that more important.
Right. So I would have liked to have, you know, the XP rates they had announced to begin with. I think you're right. I think the people that whined and cried about it didn't play anyway, and some of the ones that whined and cried about it did play and ended up liking it. So, just so much, it's hypocrites all around. A lot of that. Would have liked to known the XP rates going down, because I would have. There was a theory craft to the whole fresh start thing, where I would have put different things in different places.
Yep.
That would have made a huge difference. But overall, it really did bring RuneScape back for me. It got me playing and wanting to play. Like, it literally became my only game I was playing again. And it hasn't been like that in a very long time. I can count them on one hand of the times where RuneScape became my single game. You know, Archaeology Launch was one of them. The quest grind I did before Extinction. A few times like that. But Fresh Start, I was in it, and I wanted to be in it. I wanted to play every day. I played every day. I just really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a success. No matter what anybody tells you, you look at the high scores for this thing, and you choose one of the most common skills that people were leveling up. Like, you just take a look at Magic, and you have a look at the very back end of that XP table. 39,793 people have ranked Magic.
Yeah.
Big success. And even for one of the harder skills, if we look at my farming, for example, we go back all the way to that, 25,000.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's a success, and the question I have is, and I think it would be wonderful to hear Jagex's perspective on this. You know, how do they think it went? What did they see for the future of it? Because by them not saying anything this week, it's almost like, okay, Fresh Start is done. Let's just move along now to our next thing. And that's typically what you do when you don't want to talk about something.
You know, I'm not going to be surprised. Jagex has never been good with accepting a victory. They're like the Democrats. They can't claim anything good that they've ever done. What happened with Mining and Smithing? Oh, you know, it was good. Wouldn't do that again. You know, like, so it would not surprise me if they would snatch victory from the jaws, or defeat from the jaws of victory here. It just wouldn't surprise me, but by every metric, it was a success, and everyone that I knew that was playing it had fun.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it comes down to at the end of the day, and I hope the survey reflects that, and I hope that the uptake that we got from Fresh Start does open the door up to something else in the future. And I'll say it right here, right now, it'd be 100% okay if the next game mode was more in the lines of a OSRS League and they were able to do the entire game mode without Treasure Hunter microtransactions. But we know for RS3 that's probably not going to happen, because we saw how quickly things rocketed to the top with Treasure Hunter once those floodgates opened up, as we've discussed. And we will discuss right now in what we've been doing segment.
So I want to say that this makes me want Group Iron Man even more than before. Like, I've been wanting Group Iron Man for years now. And I feel like this is sort of an experiment that would be very similar to how Group Iron Man would work, where it's a fresh economy for the context of the players in the group, but you aren't totally solo. So different skill sets or different people want to do different stuff.
And I think if I remember correctly, I think the reason we didn't get it for RS3 was because they said it was engine problems with the bank, the shared bank. But Old School did it. Granted, simpler code base, yada yada yada, right? But
yeah, I mean,
all of the things.
I get that it's difficult or whatever, but I don't know. I just think that this demonstrates that there would be a huge amount of interest in something similar to it. And I think Group Iron Man is very, very similar to Fresh Start Worlds.
Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it, actually, because we kind of did do that same sort of thing in the beginning where you were the one mm-hmm. providing all the tools and,
And it was fun. Like that part of it was really, really fun. Like,
yeah.
I really liked that part. I liked the fresh economy. I liked not being able I don't know. It really taught me that I always thought I couldn't live with this Grand Exchange. There's no way I could do Iron Man. I couldn't do any of that stuff. And then Fresh Start came along and I'm like, I could totally do this stuff. In fact, I like it better, I think.
Maybe Iron Man is on your docket for this year.
Yeah, I definitely have exponentially more fun on Iron Man than when I play my main, because every single thing you accomplish feels so much bigger. It's really cool that things that would be totally meaningless for a main are suddenly incredibly meaningful. And so if you really liked this experience, you'd probably like Iron Man. But Group Iron Man would be much, much closer to the Fresh Start experience than an actual Iron
Man, I think. Yeah, that's
true. That would be even better. Like I would love, Group Iron Man.
I think a lot of people would give Jagex money, either in the form of bonds or in the form of
absolutely real money. And I mean, Fresh Start has proven that too for alts and whatnot. So,
we gave them lots of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, what have we been up to, Tanis? How did you end Fresh Start?
So I ended up. I ended with 999, and 5 pets.
Holy crap!
So that was cool. Like I said, I didn't set out to get any 120s. I set out to get as many 99s as possible. Preferably as many gathering skills as I could. I did get all of the gathering skills except for farming. I didn't finish that one off. But towards the end, I did pick up, I did actually pick up ranged and slayer. So I did my, my favorite skill. I thought there would be no way that I'd have enough time to do Slayer, especially towards the end there. But somehow,
That surprises me too.
It really surprised me too. But that was awesome. And I basically, if I hadn't gotten my Steam Deck for Christmas, I probably could have finished with 1099s. I came really close to 99 thieving. I ended up with like 97 mil Sunday night when I went to bed. So it's like, but I had to work, what can you do, right? Yeah. Like you're just like, So, but yeah, that was, that's how I finished up. And then this week, just did a little bit of, Vindicta, and I went back to, the original God Wars just to see if I could find that tooth that I never found. Right. I didn't, it didn't show up again, but, but that's where I tested out the mobile, to see if I could do any combat, you know, using mobile at all. And I did. And that was cool.
Sounds good. Well, for me, I finished Fresh Start with not as many 99s as you, but I did get 120 farming on Christmas Day with that. And, you know, I finished the competitive period at rank 24 and slid to rank 68 by the end of it all, which isn't too bad because after the competitive period was done, I basically just moved to POF and ranch dinosaurs on that. Also, over the Christmas period, I got 99 woodcutting, 99 firemaking, and 99 archaeology, and I also finished off 99 magic as well with the ample amount of dummies that I was provided. And that's why I say the treasure hunter goods that you're given with Fresh Start should not be underestimated from quests or otherwise, and just all the protean items and whatnot that exist. Like, I used a pinch of my Acadias that I cut. I have like 10,000 Acadias, right? Then I bought a stockpile of corrupted magics, and then that got me to 90 fire making. And then from there, it was just proteans out because those burn with such higher XP rate, and you can do it, you know, just standing still at a portable brazier. So, I agree with you. Fresh Start was perfect. Perfect is a better way of putting it. But I'm glad to have done it, is what I'll say. The positives far outweigh the many negatives that people talk about for me. I already talked about them. I only have a few negatives throughout this entire thing, so I'm not too upset with this. I didn't get the purple halo. Did you get the purple halo by the end of it?
I didn't get any halos.
Okay. Yeah. I think the purple one was about 300 mil last I looked on their prices. And that one does become a tradable item that's going to be able to be traded around to various people in the community and whatnot. So that's a new tradable rare. But we're not going to go too far into the depths of our Fresh Start experience. That's kind of going to be reserved for a look back, maybe once we hear from Jagex on it and once we've had time to let our thoughts settle in on this. And the other thing that I want to say when it comes to Fresh Start is that in terms of looking at all the stats and everything that were here, it was different. It certainly just felt different throughout the entire process, didn't it? And you lost that feeling when you got back to Maine.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of rekindled a little bit of, you know, just excitement. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm gonna continue my 120 all grind. But I'm saving my fresh start account for every double XP from here on out will be my fresh start account. As far as
give you something to do on double XP again.
Well, my fresh start has never been touched by that icky standard XP rate. even when we went all the way down, I had bonus XP in the skills that I was training. So it will never taste that bland XP rate that the main game has.
All right, fair enough. But as for Mainscape, I think I'm on Yak Track task 45. I've just been powering through that since Fresh Start ended, and the Yak Track does go fast when you actually play the main task on there. I don't do dungeoneering. I don't do agility tasks. Those ones are an instant skip, and sometimes the summoning ones are a skip as well, because I don't want to be running back and forth to the altar. So but yeah, I'm just going to continue working on Yak Track until time's out on that, and I'm happy with that. Maybe sit down and do some PVM this weekend. We'll see. How about you, David? What you been up to on RS?
Well, so on my my main account, I am doing primarily thieving, but some dailies. So I decided to liquidate almost all my PVM gear, except for a very small selection of stuff, in order to buy 5.6 bill XP. And so right now I'm mostly doing AFK thieving or AFK mining or dailies on there. And then on my Iron Man, mostly Carapac, because I still only have one staff piece. And
that hurts.
I'm in the low 700s of hard mode KC solo only, with only one staff piece. So it's like I'm like 712 KC hard mode. That's just getting really unfortunate.
Yikes.
And then I'm
why
aren't
you doing that daily then for your Raptors Rampage?
Because hard mode Zuck is just way more efficient. Like a hard mode Zuck kill with my gear takes me almost half an hour, and a hard mode Carapac kill takes like 5 minutes. And so one saves me 10 minutes and one saves me an hour. So
okay, fair.
That's why. Fair. The other thing is that if I got Magma Tempest, then that would slightly improve my Carapac kill speed, I suppose. So that would be nice. So yeah. The sword pieces would be good because melee is pretty good again.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
So yeah, I mean, I'm doing my one hard mode Zuck kill a day, and then the rest of the time I'm either AFK skilling. I do a lot of AFK skilling just because of work reasons, but
fair enough.
I either
fair
do
enough.
Skilling, or if I'm actively playing the game, then that means I'm doing hard mode Carapac.
Alrighty.
Which is so boring. When we did the tier rankings, I put hard mode Carapac as an S tier boss, which is still objectively true in my opinion. But now I want to say it's an F tier boss. I hate it. it's no longer my friend. It's really frustrating. It is like doing hard mode Carapac at this point feels like watching paint dry, because I don't even like it doesn't even register. Like what I'm doing doesn't even register anymore because it's so automatic.
Well, yeah, the boss is effectively the same thing throughout the entire thing. It's just, you know, skip the lightning on 1 through 3, and then phase 4 is the same for each kill. So
yeah. Yeah. Yep. So just wait in on my fractured stuff. When I do finally get it, I've got a shadow die to put on it. So that'll be
cool.
that's gonna look
nice.
Yeah, that's why I want the inverted 120 thieving cape, because I think that would look cool with the FSOA shadow die. But
oh, yeah.
I really have not figured out a secure way of getting a token onto my Iron Man, because I'm a little spooked by random people in World 2, and I can't find...
Well, I'd sell you one if I went for 120 thieving, but I did not, so...
Yeah, I know that there are like friends chats where there are ranks who are apparently trustworthy to middleman tokens to Iron Man, but... I have not put in nearly enough effort to try to get that cape, but maybe someone will be able to sell one to me. I don't know.
All right. We also need to mention that the Christmas wrapping paper is also still happening as well. I don't know.
Yeah, when
is
that due? I assume that was done by now.
I know. That surprised me this week too. Tanis, did you see that? You've been happy with your present still?
It's so damn good. Yeah. It's so good.
It's so much XP.
I know I have thousands to turn in. You get wrapping paper until the 15th, and then you can turn it in until the 29th of January.
Wow. Yeah. So I'm going to be able to turn in like 300,000 wrapping paper. That's so nice.
Still no die. Need to mention that. In any case, moving on to achievements of the week with our fresh start achievements of the week, the last fresh start achievements going back almost a month at this point. Boy, we should have done something in the middle of Christmas to do all these. Starting off on January 10th, we have Taxi Cab with 99 Constitution, Battle Slash F with 99 Slayer, TTV Highcliffe with 120 Invention on the 9th. Continuing the 9th, TTV Highcliffe again with 99 Magic, Mr. Crafty FSW with 120 Invention. FSW Ripiff got 99 Slayer on the 8th. Battle Slash F got 99 Fishing. LeBron's Gains got 99 Divination on the 7th. Then on the 6th, we have Battle Slash F with 99 Smithing and Fletching. Battle Slash again with 99 Crafting on the 4th. Then FSW Mage God got 99 Herblore on the 3rd and 99 Archaeology on January 2nd.
Okay. So, Shanae got 99 Firemaking on January 1st, 2023. Shane also got 99 Magic on January 1st, 2023, and 99 Woodcutting on December 31st. LeBron's Gains got 99 Agility on December 30th. FSW Tana 79 got 99 Slayer on December 28th. Shane got 120 Farming on December 25th. FSW Tana 79 got 99 Range on December 24th. LeBron's Gains with 99 Crafting on December 23rd. TTV Highcliffe got 99 Hunter on December 22nd. RL Batora got 99 Woodcutting on December 22nd. LeBron's Gains got 99 Hunter on December 22nd. 99 Smithing on December 21st and 120 Herblore on December 20th. TTV Highcliffe got 120 Archaeology on December 19th. FSW Rippeth got 99 Herblore on December 19th. Battle Slash F got 99 Agility on December 18th, 99 Cooking on December 18th, and 99 Hunter on December 18th.
I feel like we're missing some achievements there from Christmas to the 28th, because I should have a 99 Archaeology in there somewhere that's missing.
For Shanae.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find those achievements and we'll get them for next week. I don't know where they would have went, but interesting. Tannis, take us into the regular ones.
I know where they are, Shane.
Where?
They're in a treasure hunter chest.
Oh god.
Yeah, you gotta have a treasure hunter achievements of the week section.
That was that. Minus the wood cutting.
Well, the main game achievements, so let's start off with Borizzi with 99 Smithing on the 9th. Then we have Warrock with 120 Firemaking on the 9th. We have Lithic with 99 Firemaking on the 8th. Holy Nicholas with 99 Fishing on the 8th. We have Worst Tasker with 99 Invention on the 8th. We have Scotty with 120 Smithing also on the 8th. We have Codeforge with 120 Magic on the 7th. We have Fire Afferit with 120 Fishing on the 7th. We have Rune Dragon with 120 Archaeology on the 7th. We have Skips with 120 Farming and Firemaking both on the 7th. We have Data 479 with 120 Archaeology on the 6th. We have Juju Macon with 99 Construction on the 6th. We have Silly Cat 98 with 120 Herblore on the 6th. Skips with 120 Fletching on the 6th. And Tarid Dax with 99 Hunter on the 6th.
Well done, everybody. Then continuing on the 5th, we have 82nd Airborne with 200 mil mining, Fight Caves with 120 Woodcutting. And then on the 4th, we have Anzilla with 99 Dungeoneering, Barisi with 99 Mining, Omega with 200 mil Runecrafting, Worst Tasker with 99 Herblore, Alethic with 99 Construction on the 3rd, Anzilla with 99 Archaeology, Alethic again with 99 Fishing on the 2nd, Anzilla with 99 Construction and Divination, Skomos Deputy with 99 Thieving, Turd Sniffer Zero with 99 Defense, then on the 1st, Anzilla with 99 Invention, then on the 31st of December in 2022, we have Samurai Jack with 120 Divination, Worst Tasker with 99 Farming, Lady Claw with 120 Cooking, Shaluffy with 99 Herblore, Alethic with 99 Invention on the 29th, as well as 99 Magic, Thieves got 200 mil divination on the 29th, which I understand was 200 mil all. Alethic got 99 constitution on the 28th, as well as 99 ranged. Turd Sniffer Zero with 99 Herb Lore on the 28th. And on the 27th, we go to Alethic with 99 defense and 99 attack, and Thieves with 200 mil fletching, and then finally Zerdones with 120 magic.
All right, so to continue, Kedgeworth got 99 woodcutting on December 26th, Mahin with 99 strength on the 26th, Ozazoyo with 120 agility on December 26th, Samurai Jack got 120 prayer on December 25th, 82nd Airborne got 120 hunter on December 24th, Jack BLG with 120 archaeology on December 24th, Mahin with 99 farming on December 24th, Alithic got 99 strength on December 23rd. Data 479 got 120 slayer on December 23rd. Evan with 99 cooking on December 23rd. Mad Digger got 120 fishing on December 23rd. Taffing Spy with 120 invention on December 23rd. Lord Earth got 99 thieving on December 22nd. Adani got 120 ranged and 120 hunter on December 21st. Pony Picker got 120 magic on December 21st. Paradax with 99 smithing on the 21st. Thieves 200 mil cooking on December 20th. Alithic 99 archaeology December 19th. Juju Makin got 99 archaeology on the 19th. Skomas Deputy with 99 prayer on December 19th. Bartnell's 99 agility on December 18th. Drama Free 99 prayer on the 18th. God Shaman 99 construction on the 18th. Ranger MSW 99 defense on the 18th. Adani 120 thieving December 16th. Iomi 200 mil fishing on December 16th. And Worst Tasker got 99 hunter on December 15th.
Woo! That's what happens when we pre-record shows and don't do achievements because they don't exist at that point. So I'm glad we're through that backlog. Congrats to everybody on their 99s, 120s, and 200 mils. And I'll see if I can find where the last batch of Fresh Start achievements went, because there definitely seems to be a gap there. My archaeology is not there, which is interesting. So, in terms of pick of the week, we'll be quick with this one. NASA's James Webb Telescope has confirmed its first exoplanet, and it is a rocky body about the same size as ours. We don't know what the atmosphere of this planet is going to be like yet. All we know is that it's got a rocky core to it. We do know that it's not going to be caked with some forms of gases based on what the initial modeling is going to see. With this, and one thing that does need to be mentioned with this is that this planet is only 41 light years away, which is relatively close in terms of other bodies that have been spotted out there. So this is this telescope that was a replacement to Hubble, and it took a long time to get going, and at the end of the day, there were delays in getting it up there, but now it's actually fulfilling its purpose and providing data on these exoplanets. And this was actually the first exoplanet that has actually ever been imaged in this way. And obviously, it's too far away to see full-color objects, but by examining varying spectrums of EM radiation, we're able to actually learn quite a lot from the atmosphere on this planet here that was discovered. So this is very early days for this, and if we've just found one this early, you can imagine how many others we're actually going to be able to see and confirm with this. So it's a wonderful week for science on this.
Yeah, very, very cool.
And one other thing I do want to say with this is that before anybody starts planning a trip there, they did reveal with this that the planet is going to be a few hundred degrees warmer than Earth, so that if clouds are detected, it could be a planet that shapes up being more like Venus than Earth. So just before anybody starts planning vacations there, just an FYI. But There's also a thing with Webb that they discovered that the early universe was a lot more populated than they thought it was going to be. So that was a surprise to everybody as well. But lots of fun scientific discoveries already coming out of this. And as it goes with our pick of the week, sometimes it's a game, sometimes an app, sometimes a website, and sometimes just a news article. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this one. If you guys don't normally keep your ear to the ground on these sorts of space news. So that's pick of the week.
That's a phenomenal pick of the week.
Yeah, I know. And
I love the space program.
One day we'll actually be able to image one of these and see it in full color, I'd imagine, depending on you know, where it is and whatnot. So fingers crossed on that, that we'll actually be able to get some kind of images on that, but maybe technology won't progress that far. But, I don't think there's anything else left for us to do here on this first episode of Update this year. David, thanks for being here, of course. I'll just remind everybody that you can subscribe to the podcast. We're on a whole number of podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Pocket Casts, Amazon, Stitcher, and more. Visit update.show/subscribe. That's the best way to get the podcast automatically delivered to you, including our episode from last week, the Mod Jack special on RuneScape Endgame. Definitely listen to that one if you have not. And we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. We post the episodes there and clips, nibbles from the episodes as well. And if you like what you see there, you like any of the segments we produce, do give us a like and subscribe. It greatly helps the channel out. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.